Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Robots Radio presents...
You're listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast, the best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello and welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio, and I am joined, as always, by the lore mistress extraordinaire, Mary Sybil.
Thank you.
Can't imagine like applause. Fanfare, like. Yes.
I need a theme song.
You do. What would be your theme song if you had one? Like, you don't have to, like, say it would be "Hair of the Dog" by Nazareth, but like, what's the kind of vibe that you would go for?
I don't think it'd be "Hair of the Dog" by Nazareth.
We're obviously agree to disagree.
Agree to disagree.
We don't have to agree on everything.
Oh goodness, I don't know.
As hosts of this show,
I feel like you'd have to have some heavy bass.
Okay. All right.
That's about all I got. I don't know. Never thought about that before.
Well, that's strange because I don't know. I could be growing up as a pro wrestling fan. I guess that's always been in the back of my mind pro wrestling fan. Like, what song would you come out to?
I could see that.
Anyway, enough talk about songs. Let's talk about space. Let's talk about some spell jammer. So we are only a couple of weeks away from the 5th edition version of Spelljammer being released. Everyone is very excited. Everyone is tickled pink, as pink and purple as the astral sea itself, about what's going on. And to prepare, we're going to dive into the old edition of Spelljammer so that whenever it's released here in a couple of weeks, you're not just flying blind. You have a little bit of knowledge. I mean, they are going to change some things. One thing in particular that we'll talk about is rumored to change, but I mean, I'd say the broad strokes are going to be very similar.
Yeah.
And this is from the forward to Concordance of Arcane Space, which is one of the two source books from the original Spelljammer Adventures in Space box set way back in 1989. It says, "Everything you know about space is wrong. Infinite space, stars as flaming spheres of superheated plasma, movement through space as a balance of scientific forces, thrust providing acceleration and maneuverability, scientific fact backing up natural phenomena, life on other planets built along blocks of carbon or silicon elements. Forget all that. It's wrong.
You can get out of the
You know nothing. You can get out of the atmosphere on the back of a rock, fly between the planets through a breathable ocean of air, sail between the crystal spheres that surround the inhabited worlds on a river of magical energy, encounter roving mind flayers and beholders. The stars are living things in some areas, great balls of fire in others, and pinpoints of light painted inside a sphere in others. Welcome to Spelljammer Universe. It's a magical universe." I mean,
magic, you know.
Immediately, it's pretty bombastic. Like, we're swinging for the fences.
They just kick in the door.
We're not subtle about a dang thing here at Spelljammer.
You guys want to go to space? Let's go to space.
Right? I mean, okay. It is the 80s. You know, there is a certain narcotic associated with that decade that perhaps had something to do with the frenetic energy that Spelljammer has.
Maybe. But,
Yeah, at the end of the 80s, the folks behind Dungeons and Dragons wanted to do something big. One, they wanted to take the game into outer space. And two, they didn't, by doing that, they didn't want to invalidate any of their previous material from campaign settings like Greyhawk or Forgotten Realms or Dragonlance.
Right.
In fact, they wanted them to like coexist. They wanted to be able to use, not just invalidate those, but and also not just create something that is wholly separate. Like they wanted everything to sort of work together, right?
Yep.
And they wanted to do all of this while making it still feel very much like D&D.
Like, of course.
Yeah, I mean, which is a tall order, I would say.
Agreed.
So how did they do it? Well, they created Spelljammer. So let's talk some Spelljammer basics. Let's go to Spelljammer 101.
So okay.
Planetary systems. In the case of D&D, it's your Orth from Greyhawk or your Toril from Forgotten Realm, Kryn from Dragonlance, so on and so forth. It's, you know, it's like the main planet you think of when you think of these campaign settings.
Mm-hmm.
So these are encased within a crystal sphere. So imagine like if the Milky Way galaxy was actually inside a giant, enormous crystal sphere. That's essentially like what Spelljammer is presupposing.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like I pictured the marble from the Cat's Collar in the Men in Black movie. Like the entire universe in it. That is what my brain went to immediately.
That is insightful. I wonder if the writers behind Men in Black were Spelljammer fans.
I would not be surprised.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a whole lot of sense.
But yeah, that's what my brain was like. Okay, so bag of marbles. Got it.
Bag
of marbles.
That's all it is. So for the most part, the space that's inside that sphere is called wild space. Mm-hmm. And the space that is outside of that sphere is the phlogiston. And space in Spelljammer is divided into those two distinct categories, wild space and phlogiston. And players can travel through the phlogiston, and they can also travel from sphere to sphere using ships colloquially known as Spelljammers that are equipped with a magical helm. So you got these planetary systems inside crystal spheres. Mm-hmm. You've got the wild space also in, like, you know, it's what we like traditionally know as space or think of when we think space, like inside the spheres. We have the phlogiston outside of it, and then we've got these Spelljammer ships
that travel between all of them. It's wonderful.
So let's talk crystal spheres. So they help keep the wild space in and the phlogiston out. The size is determined by the planetary system inside. So obviously the more planets, the more moons, the more stars, all that, the bigger the sphere, the bigger the marble. It's a bit of a mystery. No one's sure like of their origins or what they're made of. One theory is that the gods put them in place to protect their worlds from the phlogiston. Another theory, and I love this one, another theory is that an even greater power created them to confine both man and god. So kind of like this,
which
like,
goes back to my marble theory.
In this theory, it'd be like those little like alien kids playing marbles at the end. I assume they're kids. I don't know. Maybe adult aliens play marbles. Maybe it's like, you know,
it's a peaceful pastime for them.
Or like, yeah, like, or the kids like do all the work, and then you can enjoy like, you know, not having to do anything as an adult when you can actually enjoy it.
That's great.
What we do know is that these crystal spheres are made of an unbreakable dark ceramic material. Now there are obviously several ways to get through, because obviously how would anyone leave or arrive on a planet? There are naturally occurring portals that open at random and unpredictable intervals. The easiest way, if you can manage to find one, but it's like I said, it's completely random and unpredictable, so like good luck doing that.
Yeah. Right place, right time.
Right, exactly. Even more difficult to find are these certain rare stars which act as portals to other locations. So again, this is even more unpredictable, because you travel into the wrong star and you're, that's goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. That's, yeah. You're not traveling anywhere but to the afterlife.
Yeah. Oh, that's not where I was planning on going. Took a wrong turn at Albuquerque, ended up as space dust.
And then you have a phase door spell or a magical device which duplicates the spell's effects, which allows a spell jammer to become immaterial and then pass through. Another type of spell, either a teleport or dimension door, can just blink the ship from one side of the sphere to the other, just bypassing the sphere altogether. And then finally, another way to pass through the crystal sphere, creatures such as space dragons, or even the legendary Spelljammer ship itself, like the actual ship named Spelljammer, which all other ships are kind of named after. It's kind of like how like a gelatin snack, everyone just calls it Jello, or like an adhesive strip is Band-Aid, right?
Right. It's the one that was the most famous, becomes the title for all of them. I think Xanathar is the same way, correct?
Well, yeah, kind of. Like, I mean, it's like, you know, it's a title, that is like, you know, takes the, like that others take the name that you start to use. So yeah, so like, and we'll talk about Spelljammer in the Patreon Plus installment for this episode. But because it's gnarly. It's very much worthy of having all the other ships sort of like named after it.
Yeah, it just needed, it needs its own separate. It's entirely too much for just to give it just like a tiny bit of credit. It needs its own place to exist and be amazing. So
exactly. So so this ship, as well as creatures such as space dragons, they have the ability to open up portals through the crystal spheres, which then close very slowly, allowing other ships to wiggle on through. If they're able to time it just right. So now that we've talked about the crystal spheres, let's talk about wild space. So all the space inside a crystal shell is wild space. It's the planets and the suns and the moons and the stars and the all the usual astral suspects, as it were. It's the vast emptiness between the planets and stars. It's like I said, it's basically what we traditionally think of when we say space. And as such, there are forces like gravity that factor into the game. And again, we're not going to get super into the mechanics itself, because I'm sure that stuff is going to change in fifth edition. If you're very much interested in the mechanics of AD&D Spelljammer, then you can head on over to DM's Guild. They have reprints, PDFs of all the old stuff. It's great.
It's, I would opt to give it a read, just because there's a bunch of interesting stuff in there that I was not anticipating.
I mean, it's if you're like a D&D like historian nerd like myself, it definitely hits the spot for sure. And so outside of the crystal sphere, we have what's known as phlogiston. It's a turbulent, unstable, multicolored fluorescent gas, or like gas-like medium. It fills the regions between the crystal spheres and has varying thicknesses, forming these dense sort of rivers between the spheres that spelljammers are able to travel through. Like the crystal spheres, very little is known of the phlogiston. And from what I understand, I alluded to a pretty big change that's that we already know of from AD&D Spelljammer to 5th edition Spelljammer, is that the phlogiston in the 5th edition has been replaced by the Astral Sea. So if so, ultimate rips to the phlogiston. We hardly knew ye.
Barely.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
It's a good reference. I like that one. I got that one.
I got that reference. Okay, so we've talked crystal spheres. We've talked wild space. We have talked phlogiston. Let's talk the Spelljammer ships. So how exactly do these ships travel through space, either phlogiston or wild space? Well, they have what's known as a helm, which is a magical device which converts mystical energy into motive force, which moves the ship. Usually it's a mage or a priest slash cleric sitting at the helm, and they act as a living engine, providing the magical power to move the ship through wild space, as well as basic maneuvering. Different races build different helms, but they're not really racially exclusive. However, it's possible for a human to use a beholder helm, aka an Orbis, to navigate that ship. And it usually takes the form of like this great chair, think like a throne, like a king's throne, with styles as varied as the ship styles, which we'll get to here in a second. These ship styles are
amazing and absurd.
Amazing and absurd. For some reason, wild. I wanted to say obscene, and not like in that, like they're like tawdry, like not like
no, they but have, they a little bit of it's a little bit obscene.
It's obscene how like how absurd they are.
Yes, they're obscenely absurd.
But I was gonna say, like they offer like really cool artistic opportunities because,
right?
Like I said, we'll go into we'll talk about like what they look like. But yeah, it's just, I mean, it's just weird. I'm getting ahead of myself.
You are.
Most ships have two different helms. They have a major helm and a minor helm. And the minor helm is usually only used in situations when the major helm is unavailable for some reason. Mm-hmm. And then only one can be used at a time. So it's a backup plan, essentially.
I thought it was neat that one of the things I'd mentioned in there about the helms was that the stronger the force of magic of the person piloting the ship, they would also go farther due to that and also move quicker depending on the strength of whoever was doing it. So your higher level casters are going to be able to pilot one quicker, faster, farther than, you know, lower level guys or people that are just kind of casters, but also not.
No, yeah, exactly. So you definitely want your most powerful cleric or spellcaster, mage at the helm, essentially, like, you know, sort of like, you know, steering the ship, so to speak.
I love the literalness of it, at the helm. Well, we'll make it an actual
helm. And something I want to make plain here is that while Spelljammer is very cool and like, you know, like the idea behind it, like it's like, you know, D&D in space, it's very silly. It's very ridiculous.
It is. That might be the appeal, though.
Like they weren't so much going for Star Trek as they were going for like Flash Gordon.
Spaceballs.
They wanted something silly. They wanted something fun.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that's, and but there's also like some stuff that's like very like terrifying. Like, you know, the mind flayers are, you know, very prevalent in this campaign setting. Mind flayers are scary AF. The Nyogi
beholders
are terrifying beholders. And so like, and there's also like this sort of like undercurrent of like cosmic horror. And so when, in that sense, I think that they really did succeed in making it D&D in space, because D&D can be very silly. It can also be very scary. It can also be like very serious and very poignant and like very emotional. It can be all of these things all at once. And so
it's pretty well-rounded for all of those things. Kind of whatever it is that you're looking for, you could probably get out of it, whichever direction you wanted to go with it.
No, exactly. Absolutely. So these ships, let's talk some ship design, because they run the gamut from like I said, amazingly cool to shockingly scary to like just downright silly. So let's talk about a couple. We've got some that are like pretty basic. We've got one called a galleon, which looks just like an old pirate ship, like an old, like, you know, like
the 16th large three mast galleon ship.
And then we have like the elven flitter, which just like looks like a butterfly. In fact, it's one of several like insect inspired ships. There's the mosquito and the dragonfly or the damselfly. these are built by humans and they look like mosquitoes and dragonflies. And
it's just like a mechanical version of it.
Yeah, they kind of look almost kind of like a very Transformer-esque in that sense.
Yeah, a little bit.
Then like the wasp, which is, it looks like a wasp and it's built by lizard men. So far, like nothing like super exotic, like nothing that really like, you know, catches the eye. Just sort of like, okay, that's cool. Like I see, like, you know, I could like see like my characters find that. And then you get into like the bonkers ships, like the tyrant ships. There are several variants, but they're all built by beholders and they all resemble the creature in some way, whether there's like something resembling like a giant eye, like, or even like the ship itself is built sort of like to resemble the spherical body of a beholder. There are the Nyogi mind spiders and death spiders, which like do look like venomous spider insects, but like terrifying, like very like you know, like nightmare versions of them, of spiders. And
it absolutely looks like it could just like claw machine onto your vessel, and then what would you do?
Like, yeah, the mind spider looks like the claw machine at the arcade, except it's meant to like rip out your brain somehow
sideways, and there's also like a little protrusion in the middle for stabbing, so
yep,
it's like a stabby crane machine.
And then there is the Nautiloid, which is the mind flayer ship. It looks like a kind of like a seashell, except then it has like the tendrils like sticking out in the front.
It's kind of silly.
I mean, it's kind of silly. It's a little bit silly, a little bit scary. As far as like downright absurd, like WTF, like what is going on here? Like you messaged me and you're like, what is this?
I giggled at this so hard for like a solid 3 to 5 minutes. I kept trying to go back and read, and I had to quit reading about ships because of the Dwarven Citadel.
The Dwarven Citadel. Explain it. Describe it. What it's bonkers.
Let me find their beautiful description in here. Well, it does in fact say that the laws of reason break down around this. It
in more ways than one.
I need you to imagine, we're going to do some theater of the mind. It's a giant, great stone mountain with this fearsome dwarf's face carved into it, mustache and beard, like hairs carved into it and everything. And then atop his helmet is a massive citadel. And then a huge fist holding a hand axe. And it is absurd as you are picturing it, I promise, is the silliest ship I have ever seen.
It's amazing. Pretty awesome. Yeah, it's
amazing.
Imagine like a small mountain with a dwarf's face like carved into it. And then a small like castle on top. And then, like you said, a giant hand with an axe coming out of that. Like,
planted a castle on top around Mount Rushmore and shot it off into space.
And then, then it flies through space.
And then it has no problems flying through space.
It's amazing. And that's like what I say, like, you know, like the Nyogi Mind Spider ship, absolutely terrifying. That thing is nightmare fuel to the infinite degree. And then the Dwarven Citadel is
probably literally a flying dwarf,
the silliest thing I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. And I love both of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I messaged and was very, very amused by the whole process.
Like, did you, like, stuff. Is this serious? Are they like, is this a joke? Is this like a joke D&D module?
Somebody played yes and just let it go. Like, all right, I'm not gonna say no, I'm just gonna let it happen.
That's exactly what you said. It was like it was like the writer's version of the joke character that went a little further than they meant to. It was like literally a group of D&D folks playing yes and.
And then let's just leave it in.
It's fine. Well, that wraps it up for the ships and the wild space and the phlogiston and all that. We're going to go to the middle of the show And when we come back, we're going to talk some of the unique races that you'll find in Spelljammer. Hello and welcome to the middle of the show. Mary, what do we do in the middle of the show?
I get cozy and have snacks.
I'm not having any snacks.
Okay. Then instead, we're going to talk about all kinds of neat D&D stuff that we've got going on. There is a ton of things. We've been really lucky last couple times. Been a lot to put in the middle. It's like double stuffed here.
It's been a bit of a deluge. Is that the right word? I don't know what I'm saying. But first and foremost, we want to thank our patrons. Thank you so much for everyone on the Patreon who financially support the show. It allows us to do like cool stuff that we have a bunch of ideas. We want to get more merch out. And of course we want to, we have artistic ideas. I can't draw a stick figure. We like to compensate artists who can, who can do, and much more, draw much more than that. So we have a cool, like, you know, shirt designs and cool, you know, sticker designs and stuff like that. Plus, we still want to get our magic item of the week. Speaking of artistic talent, we want to get that drawn, the items drawn up and put on DM's Guild. So
absolutely.
All of you that support the show on Patreon, thank you so much. We want to give a special shout out to our members of the Apprentice tier, Daniel P, Jack, and Peter M. For $5 a month, they get early ad-free episodes. We also have tiers at $10, $25, and $75, all of which have cool exclusive benefits, including bonus episodes, like bonus content, the ability to have one of us join your, do a guest appearance in your campaign, or to run a campaign for you and your friends. It's a bunch of cool stuff. It's on patreon.com/dndlorecast if you're interested. And if you are in a position where you're unable to sign up for the Patreon, you still want to support the show, you can definitely do so by leaving 5-star reviews on Spotify or Apple.
Wherever you listen to your podcasts, tell them we're awesome.
Word of mouth, just good old fashioned word of mouth, telling someone IRL or even like on a BBS message board on an IRC. I'm really dating myself here with these references. But yeah, just like telling someone you think would enjoy the show about us. We would greatly appreciate that. Let's talk about some of this cool D&D stuff that's not even like, you know, this is stuff that has been like since last week. Like, it's like new stuff.
There's so much stuff. I love it.
So speaking of Spelljammer, Spelljammer Academy, all four installments of this 4-part series I became the Swedish chef all of a sudden, are now out on D&D Beyond. This adventure series takes you from level 1 to level 4, and it readies your characters for the adventure that is included in this month's Spelljammer set, which is called Light of the Xerixes. So instead of just starting at level 5, you can actually get a small taste of what's to come and do this 4-part adventure beforehand. And it's free. It's free. It's free of charge.
That's the best price.
I love
it. I'm just saying. I love free stuff.
Best price point. Speaking of more Spelljammer stuff, JammerCon is August 20th. So JammerCon is a online convention that it's a day-long Spelljammer extravaganza. It's August 20th. It starts at 8 a.m. Eastern time. It's a diverse range of Spelljammer themed games run throughout the entire length of the day. You've got games from both old and new rule sets. The DMs are going to be proficient in advanced Dungeons and Dragons. There's even some third edition D20 stuff. And then also the new version, the new fifth edition. There's going to be prize giveaways. There's going to be panels starring community leaders. And registration is now open. You can go to warhorn.net There's a link to the registration in the show notes, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be a blast. Like the folks that are behind this know what they're doing as far as putting together an online convention. And it's just a way, and they're all huge Spelljammer fans. So it's a way to sort of celebrate Spelljammer coming back after, you know, almost almost 20 years.
Is it 20?
I think.
Well, oh, I feel like it's more than that.
It is over to almost 30 years.
Like 32 years, yeah. 33 years. That is so, oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Well, I am of the age where like everything seems like, the 80s seem like 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, no, Bubba, that's like 40 years ago, honey.
I'm barely older than Spelljammer. Just barely.
So yes, JammerCon, check out the link in the show notes if you're interested in participating or even just enjoying it.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is like, I'm very excited about this as well. But speaking of like older campaign settings coming back, they announced a Dragonlance adventure for the end of this year. So I'm sure more details will come out as we get closer to it. But the first volume of the new Dragonlance novel series came out this week. Dragons of Deceit by Margaret Weis and Tracy Hickman is out now. Very excited. This has been like the first proper Dragonlance book in quite a while. And I would say that like, even if you didn't know what D&D was, if you spent any time in a bookstore, you know, over the past 20 years, you probably, or even a library, you probably came across a Dragonlance book, even if you didn't know exactly what it was.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that statement.
So the brand new book is out now. You can pick it up wherever you get your books. I know for a fact that Margaret Weis is actually at Gen Con this weekend. And once she gets back, once she's done with that, they're going to once again start selling autographed copies of the book on her website. And so they just want to make sure, I guess, put a hole on that while she's off doing Gen Con.
Yeah, that'd be an awful lot to try to manage at once.
Right.
That's pretty exciting, though.
It's very cool. Like, I can't wait to read it. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And this is something you sent me.
It is.
Cool. But like I said, you're the one who brought it to my attention. So I'll go ahead and allow you to talk about it.
Okay. So there's an actual play podcast called Dark Dice that is created by Travis Vingroff and his lovely wife. And this is that is what got me into D&D, was listening to it. So it is a horror themed podcast. They're in their second season. During the second season at the beginning of the pre-release, they announced that Jeff Goldblum would be playing one of their characters and playing D&D with them. He plays character Balmer in season 2. I will not give you any spoilers. And if you want to find out, I guess you'll just have to go listen. But they are getting minis made. There's a Kickstarter for it. And they did a release earlier, I believe this week, of Balmer's mini. So what that means is there is a D&D mini of Jeff Goldblum.
It's Balmer, but
it's absolutely 100% Goldblum. Excited.
A Goldblum mini. So yeah, a link to that Kickstarter will be included in the show notes as well. I had blown over my head, blown under the radar for me, was unfamiliar with this actual play podcast. As soon as you sent this to me, I'm like, I need to start listening to that like yesterday. I mean, like, horror, yes. Like D&D, check. Horror, check. Jeff Goldblum, check. All the checks.
Absolutely. I have not at any point been disappointed except when I binged all of it and had to wait for new episodes. That's the only disappointment I faced. Like, it's what started the entire love of D&D was this podcast for me.
And then, of course, we have our DM's Guild Corner of the Week. Now, this is known as Black Vines of Night, and it's described as such. In the final days, the stars wilted upon the black vines of night as even the dead sprung forth to deliver us from his gaze. When the skies darkened, only then did we behold his face, and all our wailing could not drown out his silence. Silence has fallen over Glyph. On the edge of Faerun's solar system, a great mind flayer empire once ruled, and then Atropos came. Amid the ruins, the mind flayer lich, Azuluk, plots to rebuild the empire in Atropos's dread image. So very much in keeping with like the horror theme, cosmic horror at that. It's the best. It's a 4 to 6 hour adventure for 3 to 6, 14 to 16 level characters.
Ooh.
This is a chance to, you know, if you're anything like most campaigns, it's, you know, you start off and you play, and then, you know, life gets in the way, and then you're kind of like stuck in a stasis, and it's hard to get out of those like early levels.
This is coming out swinging with the attacks, are we?
Exactly. This is a chance to like let your players build test characters,
mm-hmm.
and like you said, test out, you know, abilities and spells and stuff that they normally otherwise wouldn't get. There are 6 suggested adventure hooks for getting your Forgotten Realms characters to Glyph, a choice of 3 companion NPCs, each with their own goals and agenda, which I love.
Mm.
4 suggested endings with choice dependent rewards, which is also a great, it's like a video game. It's like, you know, where you have different endings.
Yeah, I like that part too, the versatility there. It was always fun.
5 all new creatures, including the blasphemous Angel of the Decay and the unfortunately named I always trip up on this.
Zombilithid?
Zombilithid.
I'm picturing him in overalls with a really, really bad southern accent.
Zombilithid.
Well, hi there, I'm Zombilithid. Oh,
welcome
Lord.
To Glyph.
Welcome to Glyph.
But it also includes stat blocks for 3 different types of spell jammers. Ooh. With 4 equipable modifications and a new player race known as the Tragic Ortlings.
Oh.
So this is very cool. It's on DM's Guild. You can buy it now. I think it's only I don't have the price written down for some reason. Yeah, it's only $2.99. It's, you know, for something that will, like I said, it's a 4 to 6 hour adventure. You know, that's less than $1 per hour.
It's
you're
true.
Being entertained for less than $1 an hour. You can't, in this economy, you can't beat that price.
Plus, you get multiple endings, multiple options. You're going to have to play it at least 3 or 4 times. And at that rate, you'd be a fool not to buy it.
Look, I'm not calling you a foolish, Mary is, but
I'll own it. I might have said it.
Yeah, you're a dang fool. I said it.
You heard what Zombilithid said. Now go out and buy it, y'all.
Don't be foolish now. Buy it. And of course, a link is provided in the show notes. I have a copy. It's the artwork looks great. The story is very cool. It's mm-hmm. If you're into cosmic horror, definitely check it out.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, let's go to the end of the show. Welcome back. We've got some spell jammer unique races to talk about.
I'm very proud of you for making it through all of the space, through the wild space, through the phlogiston, to the end of the show where we're at. So life in space is divided up into major and minor races. So these are defined by whether a race has established a presence in space. Major races have bases, colonies, large populations. They have, you know, navies and have all of their stuff situated. Whereas the minor races, they do not have all of those things.
Which makes sense. I mean, like if you have sort of like all if you have that much of a presence in space.
Right. Most of the major races also have ships that are designed specified to their races, which we had discussed some of those earlier in the show. However, the titles of minor and major are mostly for bragging rights, so that, you know, major races can talk down to minor races and remind them that there's not that many of them there. I feel like it's kind of a power struggle there, or a little bit, well, not a struggle, I guess.
They, even in space, there's, oh, we always have to have some sort of pecking order. Ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. So some of our, I guess we'll talk about the little guys first, the minor races. Halflings, we'll find Gif, centaurs, the Kender, giants, and dragons. Some of these we know about. I'm pretty sure we've all met a dragon or two, maybe met a halfling. Centaurs are kind of self-explanatory. The Gif are hippo folk.
The gif. When I think of Spelljammer, there are a few specific things I think of, and the hippo folk are definitely one of them.
They are not what I expected for them to be, but it made perfect sense at the same time. So these hippo folk, 8 to 9 feet tall, militant type society. Very, very structured, very order, obedient to their chain of command. And that's just like, that's whoever's in charge, that's who's in charge. And we follow our orders and just keep, you know, straight and narrow there. They're strong, graceful.
As hippos are, yeah.
Right. Graceful and excellent reflexes.
As hippos are.
Mm-hmm. But they're not very wise or intelligent.
They eat marbles, so makes sense. They're marble vores.
Marble force? Oh, that sounds unfortunate and bad for your teeth.
That's why they only got the two big ones.
Oh, those two. That's why there's only those. It's all the marbles. Why. Oh, okay.
Too many marbles. Yeah, too many marbles in your diet.
Don't be biting the marbles. You'll end up with hippo teeth.
What my mom always told me.
Is it? Yep. So Gif could move up within the ranks, you know, in their society, but their rank can only be changed by their superiors. They prefer to spend most of their time around their own kind, but they can and will get along with anybody who is willing to pay them. Like, all right, I could be friendly for, you know, for some change. They're often hired as, you know, personal guards, bodyguards, things of that nature, because they are very much to the T and do their job and stick to it.
Makes sense.
They have a mild resistance to magic, incapable of casting spells. Often decorated their tattoos. Sure, decorate their tattoos. Decorate their skin with tattoos, showing and depicting their accomplishments, but are always dressed in their uniforms or elaborate and durable army, and are known to carry multiple firearms. So these hippos in their military uniforms slinging guns in space,
like, and sort of like that that very like pageantry-esque like military uniform, think like, mm-hmm, like that stuff like Michael Jackson used to wear with like the like the shoulder pads, like very much like, not like, you know, fatigues, which although some GIF do, but A lot of GIF are like sort of wear that like old school sort of like Napoleon, like, Bonaparte sort of military uniform.
Full and I love them for regalia with the epaulettes. And most of the pictures I've seen also include a monocle. I don't know that you have to, but I would.
I like it.
But yeah, they are pretty invested as well in the collection of various weapons as well. Some of them are known to keep like a, oh, hey, I got this one from this planet. I got this one from that world. I was three worlds over and got these. So I thought those were pretty fascinating. We also have the Kender, which I had not heard of until I had read through this.
They're from Dragonlance.
Okay. Yeah. See, I've been stuck in Faerun and Ravnica.
Well, yeah, like Dragonlance hasn't, like I said, they haven't really been around in mm-hmm, quite a while, so.
Exciting to see where things go.
But yeah, they a lot of there's a lot of Kender slandering, but I think it's unwarranted
slander. I mean, could be. They're small in size. They resemble, this was the way that it was worded, I struggled with a few times. They resemble a muscled human child. So I'm picturing a super buff toddler. And I can't not. Little buff boy. They're similar to halflings, but they have a very distinctly pointy ears, much like the elves. They are, however, completely immune to magical fear and are not able to feel it naturally either. So they have zero fear, all of the gusto. That's a nice way to put it, right? All the moxie. Audacity. Moxie. They got all of it. So because they were created magically, they're not known to be able to cast arcane magic. They're very skilled at carefully removing belongings from pockets of their original owners.
A very diplomatic way to say they're good at stealing.
They're good at being pickpockets. Sneaky little boogers. Also skilled at taunting and mocking their opponents. But they're known to have extremely high voices. So just imagine you're getting yelled at by tiny little chipmunks.
Like roasted.
Roasted by chipmunks. Chipmunks roasting on an open fire. It's a Christmas song in there somewhere, I'm pretty sure. But they are, it's just the mental image of all these little things. I tend to make connections between various other sources of things that I've seen and interacted with. And my brain immediately went to the taunting from Mike Python and the Holy Grail, but I'm picturing it pitched up real, right. Real high.
Like Alvin and the Chipmunks style.
Yes, perfectly. They do, as far as society goes, though, they are very family oriented and tend to have like the one large house for their family group, often decorated by things that they create themselves, as they are known to be tinkerers and creators.
Nice.
Those were two of the two that I thought were interesting and not super typical, but seem kind of specific to this area, as far as I know. Major races include humans, elves, dwarves, you know, mind flayers, beholders, and the Nyogi.
The aforementioned Nyogi.
Yes. I thought it was interesting that the mind flayers have very established navies, colonies, and they engage in trade with everybody, like everyone. So just, you know, going to go meet up with the mind flayers. No big deal. And they do some trade salt. Agreements.
I've got some wheat, some space salt and some space wheat.
Sweet. Probably does it have probably still be intolerant to the gluten there too. Space gluten.
Take everything anybody. Is space.
Space gluten. Look, I've done well not to sing Sledgehammer or Spelljammer to the tune of Sledgehammer so far.
We've still got a couple of weeks of covering. It's,
oh good. It'll happen. Y'all are gonna get tortured and I'm sorry. Let's see. There were do we want to go into the Nyogi or do you want to save them?
Oh, yeah, we definitely got to talk Nyogi.
Right. But did you want to save them for last?
Let's jump right into them.
Let's jump right into them. Okay. So the Nyogi are a race of spider-like creatures hated in the known space by literally everybody. Now, these things are terrifying. I would rather meet just about anything else I've seen. These are a combination of essentially a wolf spider, but picture a long eel coming up off the top of it.
Yeah, it's disgusting. It's just like so looking gross. At it, like gives you the heebie-jeebies. Like it makes you shudder.
I have no issues with arachnids. I'm arachnophobic in any way, shape, or form, but these things make me visibly uncomfortable. the adults are human child sized, which again, they're also small and terrifying. They use mind control so frequently that they have come to believe it is just a normal part of life. Like you just, if someone's weaker than you, control them, make them do what you need them to do. Take them as a slave.
Just another day.
Just another day. Just
same
another
day, different stuff.
Yeah.
or
they don't understand
day, same stuff. I said that backwards. I'm sorry. Something. Go on.
It's fine.
I need a yogi to control my mind so I say things right.
I don't think that's how they work. I think it'd be a bad idea, but you do you. I support your choices. They consider everyone to be property of somebody. So they just assume everybody belongs to somebody else, and they use this mind control frequently throughout all interactions. They are owned by everybody above them in the chain of command. It is a pyramid scheme of mind control and insanity.
It is the multi-level marketing of
yes.
wolf, spider, eel insanity.
It's so gross. But when they're not doing work for their masters, they are, however, free to just, you know, whatever, pursue whatever money gaining ventures that they want to. But because of their ability to handle more of the harsher environments that some of the other races' bodies are not built to do, they can often get items and different sorts of resources and things that other people don't have access to, which then makes them a very valuable partner, but also extremely dangerous.
Right, right.
They often set up their little colonies near mind flayers and drow, driven by greed. And anyone doing trade deals with them is in the dangerous position because they could just decide they want your product and they want to take you as a slave.
Yeah, that's a hell of a trade partner to have.
Is it really worth it? Like, do you really need it that much? Are you sure you need those slabs of space rock for the driveway?
Do you need that space wheat?
Do we need the space wheat?
Do we need the space salt?
So a race can go from being a minor race to becoming a major race and vice versa. Orcs and orc kin used to be one of the major races in space until their races in space. I don't mean to rhyme so much. I'm sorry. But their navies were practically eliminated. And without them having that massive power, they are now considered to be a minor race.
So yeah, so this is all like very malleable. It can change. Mm-hmm. I like that.
At any point in time, there's just so many directions it could go. I love the open-ended creativity aspect of it. In addition to those things, there are several extraplanar beings, various elementals, demons, archons, modrons, and the Slotty. However, these don't like being in wild space. Their ties to their home planes, are the strongest on the largest planets, because bigger the planet, more portals to other planes of existence that way. So while you can call them for certain services, like if you have spells for that sort of thing or items for that sort of thing, you're more than welcome to, but they'll come when they're called, but they are going to do what they're supposed to do and get the heck out of there as quickly as they possibly can. Their services will be limited and very short. They don't want to be there.
They're not trying to mess around with all that.
No, I don't want any part of this. I would like to go home. Space is terrifying. Send me back to the fire.
So what is your favorite space creature? Before we wrap up, we've talked about Nyogi. They're terrifying. I mean, even if they are terrifying, they could still be your favorite simply because they're so terrifying.
I do like that they're scary.
Yeah, we've talked about
cosmic horror.
Yeah, exactly. The Gif, the Kender. But what is your favorite space monster?
Space creature? My absolute favorite space creature had me on a tangent. I completely forgot I was researching for anything and just got excited and went all ham on it. Pun intended. Giant space hamsters.
Of course, the most famous of them is Boo of Minx and Boo fame. Giant space hamster.
But they are just, I just got all kinds of excited. I like squishy, fluffy things and horrifying things. So, you know.
And small little Easter egg, sort of like deep cut giant space hamster meat in Spelljammer is known as Spaham.
I want to believe you and don't want to believe you at the same time.
It's fine. It's fine. You could. It's a very, fantastic. Very justifiable reaction to that knowledge, to that information.
I also feel like, I probably wouldn't eat that. Though, like, I don't think I could be comfortable with that. They're too cute.
Well, I mean,
like giant bear-sized hamsters. Come on,
don't knock it till you try it.
Oh.
Well, that wraps it up just about for this week. Before we leave, what do we have for our magical item of the week?
Oh, Mistress Mary does have a magic item of the week. This. Well, it's technically two items, but one at the same time. We have Tareen's Bands of Wishful Thinking. So this is a dual set of matching rings that are magical and wonderful. The user does splits a small part of their soul into one ring and either leaves it with somebody they trust or stashes it somewhere on their home plane. It can be used as a kind of a transportation point. You can just poof back to the other part of your soul, get put back together, and carry on with your life. However.
Okay, so you split off part of your soul, put it in one ring, you get the other one, and then you sort of like, that's it, you're able to transport back to it, wherever that other ring is.
Yes. So it could be across planes. You could be out sailing on the other side of the astral sea, get yourself into some kind of crazy trouble with, I don't know, the Niyogi, and just have to, you know what? I'm done here. I want to go home. Bye. Deuces. Okay. I'm out.
Okay, cool. I heard back. A butt there. I heard there's
you did.
Okay, what's the catch?
So the catch is if the ring with your soul in it is destroyed, this piece of soul is just set free to wander for all of eternity on this home plane until you return to it.
Okay, so the ring that you're now wearing gets destroyed. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the little fragment of your soul is sort of just like floating around. Mm-hmm. Until
maybe
you come back.
You know, harassing old ladies. Who knows? I don't know what your soul wants to do. That's completely up to you what you do with it. So once that ring is destroyed.
I mean, once that ring is desold,
it's been desold, right? The user begins to suffer 2d6 necrotic damage daily until they are returned to their home planet and reunited with their soul. Soul immediately recognizes that you've landed back on the plane, says, oh, thank goodness, and rushes home, and poof, okay. You're whole again.
Okay.
Right? Sounds great. However, again, there's another but. If the user takes enough necrotic damage to die or dies while this, you know, soul is out there, again, harassing Granny, you just become a lich instead.
That's, yeah. And as we all know, as we are all aware, liches be tripping.
Liches be tripping.
So 2d6 necrotic damage every day until they're able to return back to wherever they left that other ring at.
Right. Wherever they left this other ring.
There you go. And what are they called? What is this?
That is Tareen's Bands of Wishful Thinking. Because you're really hoping it goes the way you want it to.
Yeah. For sure.
But we all know dice don't work that way.
Do they
so
ever?
So it's all wishful thinking. Ever? No, not for me. They don't. I don't know about the rest of y'all.
I've had my fair share of good rolls. Not gonna brag. Not trying to flex on anyone, but you know,
I've rolled good once.
I've rolled my fair share of 20s, if you know what I mean. Meaning
like
I roll
three?
A d20 and it lands on the 20s on coming.
Is it all 20s? You have a d20 that's just 20s? Is that?
Oh man, like what if you just roll it quick? Oh, 20, and just like grab it off the table. Like that was a 20. Everyone saw it. You saw the 20.
You saw the 20, right? It was totally a normal die. There's nothing weird happening with it. Stuff's in his pocket.
I saw a set of dice on Twitter, and the 20 said F you.
Mm-hmm.
And the one said F me.
I need one of those.
I was like, yeah, I immediately like that. That's a set that Mary would definitely want for sure.
Yep, I've seen one that has Welsh shit as the natural one too, and I'm like, that's on brand.
Yeah,
that is for perfectly sure. On brand
for sure. Well, thank you so much for joining us, for allowing us to be a part of your day. We are the Dungeons and Dragons Lorecast. You can find all of our social stuff in the show notes, our Twitters, and we're gonna start doing TikToks.
We're gonna join
the Gen Z. We're gonna join Generation Z and start talking and hopefully not be too cringe and sus.
Oh, I'm gonna be hella cringe. I'm allowed to. I have teenagers for kids. I can be cringe. I've earned it.
I have, they're preteens, but they sass me like they're teenagers for sure.
Practicing.
Yeah. They're definitely, they're definitely swinging above their weight class in that regard. But yeah, if you want any more information on what we talked about this week, check out the show notes. If you want any more information on the show, check out the show notes. All those links are available there. We'll be back next week to discuss some more Spelljammer, what happened in between Advanced Dungeons and Dragons and now, sort of what has been going on while Spelljammer has kind of been on hiatus. There was a fervent fan community keeping it alive and wanting it to come back, which is why a part of the reason why I feel like it kind of did, because of course a lot of the folks who are working for Wizards now are those same folks who played Spelljammer when it first came out. And so they're finally kind of getting their wish to bring it back. So
I love that so much.
It's so cool. Yeah. We'll have a guest to talk about all that. And then in a couple of weeks, we'll be talking about Spelljammer. It was Spelljammer 5th edition. It's finally out and it's coming out in an old school style sort of multi-book format. It's not coming in a box, which I cannot wait until the day that we get an actual box set for 5th edition, because that's how they used to come out back in the gap. It came in boxes and the books were inside the boxes with the maps and all that. But it is a 3-book set, which is still, I'll take what I can get.
Hey, don't complain. Just be glad you're getting it.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much. My name is Sergio.
I have been Mary.
And you will continue to be Mary.
We'll see.
Very ominous. Okay. Thank you for listening. And until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thanks for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with a friend, following us on Twitter at DNDLorecast, or jumping on the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.